You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
You can always reach the show with your withering criticisms. We will not block anybody. We welcome the bots and the fights and Boston fans and 76er fans coming and smearing the wall with shit. It's all welcome here. We will not block you. We understand that social media is a toxic acid dump, and sports makes it better and sports makes it worse. And a tweeter writes in, this show used to get me through bad days. Now it just makes it worse.
Is that guy?
Sorry about that.
Just a horrible criticism. A deeply hurtful criticism. It is as criticism, as hurtful as anything you could say to us. We're clearly past our prime when we used to make you feel good, but now we make the bad days worse.
No lie, this morning when I woke up, my wife asked me, are you okay? And I'm like, I think so. Why? And she's like, you seem to be talking in your sleep last night, and you were angry. She's like, did anything happen yesterday? I'm like, no, I was just, doing stuff for work yesterday. So maybe there's something, you know?
I don't understand what you mean.
I'm just saying,
say? He's never done that before.
Yeah, Right. You know what I mean?
That we're making your life worse?
I don't know.
Perhaps.
In your sleep, in the truth of your dreams, that your life has been made worse because you're sleeping angry because this life, this show used to make your life better, but now it makes it worse?
Just saying, someone texted, and yesterday I was sleep angry talking, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't related to work, from my understanding. It was something about me needing to build a swing. But I don't have a swing, and I've never had a swing, and I am not in the process of building a swing.
Have you been telling yourself I need to build a swing at any point, like for the kid, or?
Swings are fun.
Yeah, I like a swing.
Yeah, I like a good, what's your swing? Is your swing the one that it's just kind of like that rubber thing, or do you like the one with like the harness that goes over like a roller coaster?
I like two ropes on a, with my swing. It's hanging from a branch. I have a nice, like wood.
For
it's
a
not
tire
cushion.
Swing?
Yeah, like an old school swing, and I like, kickstarting it and swinging around,
Kickstarting it.
Yeah. Well, you kickstart, your legs back and forth like this. That's how you get the momentum, the energy, the kinetic energy.
You just go
energy.
Outside and swing on your swing?
Well, I don't have a swing anymore. This is back when I had a swing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to have just one giant rope hanging from an oak tree, and then it had a little plastic Fisher-Price disc at the bottom of it, and then I'd climb the rope. But now that oak tree's getting a little bit older, and I'm not sure that it should be climbed anymore, because I'm worried that the giant branch is going to fall and murder me or my child if I have them do that. So I kind of try to stay away from that swing.
The best swing is a swing that swings over a lake.
The best swing is Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah, well, that's the kid.
Put it on the poll. Better swing. Better swing. The swing that swings over a lake or Ken Griffey Jr. You guys bypassed very quickly. Stugat's describing as kickstarting him and his nubby legs swinging back and forth to get a swing started with a heater in his mouth. I want you to imagine him waddling out to a swing set and then kickstarting it with his sausage legs by thrusting them out into the sky as if he were over an imaginary lake.
So cathartic.
It sounds like pure bliss. Like, I'm not even a smoker, but that just seems like what heaven would be like.
You know, it is. I got to tell you, swinging over a lake with a heater, I mean, there is nothing like it. And I, you know,
it's how I imagine meeting you at the Pearly Gate. Would be like, just you.
I'll be waiting for you, Mike.
From a branch, wiggling his toes in the air.
Wiggling your sausage toes.
Mike, I got the devil plus 180. He's just right outside.
Can you believe it? Through heaven, it's cutting it up.
It's good value on the devil, huh?
I got Beelzebub. He's got a home field.
Don't Who's let that? Anybody in here, huh?
I love Stugat swinging. Stugat swinging right outside the Pearly Gates. It's not even purgatory. It's just heckling people as they come in, reminding them what's on the outside. Just degeneracy, sin, beard, and blowing plumes of smoke, cigarette smoke in your face.
Trying to get Joan on stupidity.
You have me still broadcasting from heaven.
Yeah, but yes. You're only trying to get Jonah to get Moses.
Malone, right?
Another tweeter writes in, all due respect to Mike, Tom Cruise is ass. He's an industry creation off camera. He's beyond weird and unlikable. And to be completely real, dude is a slightly above average actor. I don't get the fascination. Tom Cruise has so little to do with this being a success, and the original is closer to a meme than classic or great cinema.
He's that guy. Yeah.
All of that might be true, but I went to see Maverick yesterday, and I got to tell you, it's been a rough couple of years in the country, right? If you want some feel good, I'm not going to give away too much here. It was fantastic. It was so well done. The music gave me goosebumps. There are certain scenes that if you love the movie the way I love the movie, the way Mike loved the movie, I am telling you, goosebumps for 2 hours. Like, you're going to love it, okay? And Jennifer Connelly was absolutely amazing in the movie. I love her. I do. I thought she was great. It's a weird thing to say, I know, Mike, but perhaps you should win Best Supporting Actress. She was very, very good.
Oh, what? I should win Best? I don't think I can.
Oh, okay. Well, she should.
And she should.
Yes. Okay. I am telling you, if you want to feel good and forget about life for 2 hours, okay, and you want to hug an old man who may or may not have COVID, because that's what I did yesterday, and he was coughing. But I am telling
what,
you.
What?
Well, he had a little cough. I didn't, Dan, it's
at the theater?
This COVID is tricky because I don't know if he's just an old man who has a little bit of a cough, but there were a few scenes where you just have to interact with the crowd, and I wanted to interact with the crowd. So there was a high five. There were a couple of fist bumps. There was some hugging going on. It reminded me of Karate Kid and Rocky back in the 80s when I was growing up.
I don't believe that you were
I'm telling you, Dan, you haven't seen the movie.
You're hugging coughing strangers because of being transported by Top Gun?
I was fist bumping with a guy. I hugged an older gentleman. I did. He was sitting two seats away from me. And by the way,
you got up from your seat during a scene.
At the end, yeah. He was a nice guy.
COVID is tricky.
I think
tricky.
Mel was his name. Yeah.
COVID is tricky. Yeah. Put it on the poll. Is COVID
I
tricky?
I think Mel was his name, is the tentacle that he throws out lazily. I mean, the detail on the lie to cover it up. I think Mel was his name.
It was a 4:20 start time, and you know what that means, Dana.
Hell yeah.
Mel, I don't know who it was. It was a guy, you know, we embraced.
You're getting so lazy with your lies that your cover-up.
Not a lie, man.
I think Mel was his name.
Yeah.
It, as a cover-up.
I love Mel.
Mike Ryan, this movie.
His phone rang during the movie. Mel didn't know how to shut it off. It was fantastic. Everyone's laughing at it. But movie theaters have changed.
More nonsense details to cover up the lie.
My seat reclined.
You did not hug some stranger named Mel.
It has been a while.
Well, his phone rang, Dan. Yeah.
His phone rang. He didn't know how to shut it off.
Stugatz has not been. I love this.
My seat reclined.
Stugatz hasn't been to the theater in 10 years. Now he wanders over. Best movie, best picture. Love Jennifer Connelly. I've got opinions, Dan. I've got movie opinions. Even though the last movie I saw before this was was Tango and Cash.
This is the only movie that would lure me out to a theater. I didn't want to wait for it on TV. They said go see it on the biggest screen possible, and they were right, and so I did. I went to see it on the biggest screen possible. I'm just telling you, Dan, if you want some feel-good for 2 hours in your life, go see this movie. It was fantastic. Well, Scott,
and this is where I will lose and you will win forever on Top Gun and beyond, because I thought to myself upon hearing that they were going to do this and then it was delayed. Bad idea cannot be executed the way it needs to be executed. How the hell are they going to do a fighter pilot movie that keeps up with Tom Cruise in his late 50s? But the reviews are so spectacular that this thing has clearly exceeded what were expectations. And I'm not, like, of course, America wants to feel good about something, man. And the movies are supposed to transport us. And this dude is one of the last remaining movie stars. And he opens over 100 million because people are desperate for what? Nostalgia, transport me, get me out of here. I want to go to the theater. I'm over 35. I'm afraid of COVID, but I'm tired. I'm afraid of how often I've been afraid over the last 3 years. Get me to a theater. Tom Cruise, save me. Rescue me with your surgically enhanced face that's meant for movie stardom.
That's why that criticism from that Twitter account was so off base. Like, okay, maybe early on he was crowned by the industry. You know how many actors have been crowned by the industry since? None of them have this longevity. None of them. He has it. He has a quality about him. He is such a charming presence on screen. He is such a dynamic, charismatic leading man that you're willing to look past some crazy off-field concerns.
Yes.
When it comes to Tom Cruise, because he just makes you emote when you're watching his films.
Mm-hmm.
He has a way to draw you in that nobody can replicate. He is the greatest movie star of our lives.
He comes on before the movie, a little thank you, explains how hard everyone worked. And by the way, the Mission Impossible movie looks amazing. Looks
part 7, part 1?
Yeah. Looks unbelievable. How is he still doing this?
It looks like they're revisiting a lot of the stuff that happened in the original. I'm happy to see that.
I love how is he still doing this when the competition is 80-year-old Liam Neeson.
Well, he also did this five years ago.
But how is he still doing this when all of the action stars, every one of them, even The Rock now, all of them are over 50. Of course, he would be the conqueror of all of them. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Mike, you're alleging that Tom Cruise is the greatest movie star we've ever had, is what you're alleging.
Of course he is.
You're alleging in the history of the screen, a guy who just opened with his first $100 million film and has made largely, you know, action movies that are silly but sustainable franchises.
Yeah, I'm looking at a list of the greatest actors ever produced, and it's Tom Cruise, because he also, while he's a great leading man in action films, he also is a tremendous actor, and he can carry a dramatic role as well.
For our lifetime, Dan, he is our actor, is he not? I mean, Risky Business and The Outsiders, Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire.
The only guy that's close is Nicolas Cage.
I have been doing the...
horrible suggestion.
No, it's true.
My dogs ordered a Nicolas Cage movie by themselves the other day.
Did they love it?
I was very upset. I was very upset because this is what happened. I blamed my daughter, my daughter, Dan. I blamed my daughter for reordering Sling, which I haven't had for a year and a half, because I noticed on my bank account that I had been charged for Sling. And I was like, how did this happen? No. So I thought that she had been I thought she had been playing with the remote. So I blamed her for it, right? And then I found out, like, okay, I called them. They were able to, like, refund me for the month. And I found out she had done this, like, a month before. So I had already spent, like, a ton of money. And then yesterday, I see the dogs jumping around and they land on the remote and I just like walk in. I thought nothing of it. And I walk in and I see this Nicolas Cage movie has been playing for 8 minutes that they just ordered. How does a dog
Which
order?
One? Is it a battleship? Is it a crazed pig that's
it was
searching for truffles?
It was on something called Tubi, which I've never even heard of, but somehow they went deep
they
enough.
Bought that too.
Yeah, they got
but
something called
But you don't know which
Tubi.
One it was. He's made as many movies recently as Bruce Willis, who was being held hostage by people in the industry who were just feeding him lines in his ear.
No, I think this was from 2006. I'm gonna investigate this situation and tell you which one it was. But yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to object to what Mike Ryan has done here because I can't let him get away. I understand your fandom, and I understand that you have a pillow of Nicolas Cage, and so for you to bestow upon Tom Cruise, this greatest actor, thespian of our times, biggest movie star ever, when he has, and you've heard me do this riff before, I'm not going to do the whole riff again, but he's been one character. That's not range on acting, Mike. It's the same dude in every movie. That is not range. It's cocky guy who is great at being cocky guy.
Have you seen Night and Day?
That's a great film.
Thank you.
That's honestly,
I know it is.
It's on my Mount Rushmore of chemistry in
films.
Yes,
amazing.
Just off the charts chemistry between he and Cameron Diaz.
That's one of those where you wonder, why didn't they get together in real life? If only things would have worked out differently, you know?
Yeah. Well, that tends to happen with
like Aunt Becky and Uncle Jesse, you know? If their timelines had just matched up, maybe they could have been together.
Yeah,
and then she would have been paying off people for whatever it was, rowing, gone to jail.
Well, the one that I liked the most was Penelope Cruz and Tom Cruise because she would never have to change her last name.
He could have changed his name, like Eric, and then it would have been Cruz, Tom, C-R-U-Z.
When I say range with Tom Cruise, I understand that he's usually cocky. And when you're that confident, when you can fly fighter jets and run better than anybody else on film, say outside of maybe Will Smith.
But all his movies, Bartender, Spy, Billiards Player, Race Car Driver, Fighter Pilot.
Supreme Confidence. You have to have
Lionel Caffey. I mean, he's great in that movie.
I'm sorry. Is a sports agent not supposed to be cocky? Is a bartender not supposed to be cocky? Is a fighter jet not supposed to be cocky? He's just blending into the role. When I say range, he can be funny. He can be charming. He can be dramatic. Yeah. He can be a great villain as he was in Collateral. Yeah. He's got 3 Academy Award nominations, and he can absolutely rock an action movie like no one else can right now. The only person close to display this range, make you laugh, make you cry, make you think, pull down the critical nominations and the hardware, best actor even, and throw a roundhouse kick like you wouldn't believe, is Nicolas Cage.
No.
Tom Hanks should be an action star. Right? Like, he should kind of evolve to action star.
I mean, Odenkirk tried it in his last movie. I think
I wouldn't take him seriously, Hanks. I don't
really
think. As an action star?
He was in a war movie.
Yeah, I know, but...
And there's on Apple, he's at the front of a ship again. He's not even keeping him from Somali pirates, this guy, this time. Isn't he a commander like Nicolas Cage is on one of these ships?
He's a submarine.
This is how I determine if you could be an action star. I imagine you, physically imagine you, walking away from a car with a match in your mouth and lighting the match on your tooth, throwing it behind you.
Yeah, Cobra. Cobra,
Marion Cobretti. Okay. Could you see Tom Hanks doing something like that? Could you see him flying a fighter pilot jet?
I could see him flying a fighter pilot jet. I actually could see him. I could see him being like the captain of a submarine more than flying a fighter.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. He needs to take steroids.
Stu Gatz, how can you belly up to this conversation and say what you said, for example, about Jennifer Connelly after Mike Ryan told you that Tom Cruise has always had chemistry with everyone he's ever seen Tom Cruise on stage with or on film with, and that in this movie, exceeds and sparkles even despite Mike Ryan not believing the love interest?
Yeah, Connelly missed the mark, I think.
Okay, I mean,
she's beautiful.
She is beautiful.
Beautiful. Yeah, talented actress. One of my favorites. Yes. I'm saying.
You're saying she was the worst part of the movie?
Made me feel things in The Rocketeer that I didn't know. Like, there were things riling up within me I didn't think I was capable of at the time.
Right.
I love Jennifer Connelly.
Mm-hmm.
The Rocketeer was a good movie.
Chewing gum, huh?
I love it. Look at us bonding over The Rocketeer.
Mike, were you sad when you saw Val Kilmer? Like Iceman? Yeah. But they used him correctly,
they used it a great way. But what I want to say about Jennifer Connelly is, while beautiful, just there wasn't any chemistry there with Tom Cruise. I didn't care about their love story.
First time you've ever seen that on screen with Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise, there's always chemistry.
Kind of hard to do. It's kind of hard to do with Tom. I will say about Tom Hanks, he does have the banter advantage over Tom Cruise slightly in that Maverick received a 5-minute standing ovation at Cannes.
That's too much.
5-minute. You want to know what Elvis got? Elvis, which has been panned by several critics.
Looks very good, by the way.
It got panned by a lot of people that got advanced copies. But at Cannes, it received a 12-minute standing ovation.
I'll get out of here.
That's boring. 12 minutes?
Can you imagine clapping for 12 minutes?
No.
For anything, let alone a movie? That's got to be awkward after 5.
That movie looks terrible.
It's Baz Luhrmann, and a lot of people say this about Baz Luhrmann movies. A lot of people left Moulin Rouge saying that is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
God.
And I love Moulin Rouge. I like Baz Luhrmann. I think he's an ambitious filmmaker, but I am worried about this Elvis picture. Can't lie.
I laughed out loud the other day just because you mentioned action stars, and I just sort of feel I may be outdated on this, but whether it's Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds or Bradley Cooper being Bradley Cooper, these guys are just the brooding type of, you know, sarcastic action hero, young enough to be movie star slick. But Bradley Cooper is, I don't know if you guys have you guys seen him in makeup? I don't know if it's part of this, but he's playing Leonard Bernstein, and you will not recognize Bradley Cooper. It's like he's trying to channel Tom Cruise as Les Grossman or Les Nessman, or what's the name of the character at the end of Tropic Thunder? Les Grossman. You will not recognize Bradley Cooper. He is wearing so much makeup and trying so hard to disguise that he's Bradley Cooper. And it just, it reminded me of like Mickey Rourke making himself ugly on purpose because of the burden it was to be beautiful in Hollywood. Like Bradley Cooper's trying to show you his acting credentials by being on screen in so much makeup that you don't even know it's Bradley Cooper acting anymore.
Enough of pretty people saying it's so hard to be pretty and be in Hollywood, okay? I actually saw like a Between Two Ferns the other day, and Zach Galifianakis made a great point where he's like, you think it's so hard being pretty in Hollywood? Try being ugly and fat and making it. That's what I had to do.
Mm-hmm. Hambone? John Hamm?
Hambone.
Is that like a personal nickname? Hambone.
Yes, the reason I started at Hambone is because that is how he enters a room, by saying, as you would expect, Hambone in the house.
Really?
Are you reporting that?
I remember, yes, I am reporting that. I'm reporting that according to sources that are me. Yes. When John Hamm enters a room, he shouts Hambone in the house. When he enters an internet chat, he shouts Hambone in the house. Is John Hamm not the Between Two Ferns you're talking about, Billy?
I don't remember.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Don Levitard.
I mean, they used to call me Chris Karaoke.
Stugatz.
Karaoke.
That back row is bringing it today.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Social media sucks. The photos of Bradley Cooper have sparked an intense Twitter debate about, this is from the Times of Israel. Bradley Cooper's prosthetic nose in Leonard Bernstein's biopic sparks Jew face debate. Mm. I don't even feel comfortable saying Jew face. It should be noted that the film is directed by Steven Spielberg, who hired Bradley Cooper for the role. And one person angrily says on Twitter, this is a blue check, do not give non-Jewish actors a fake nose to play Jews.
Okay, I'd like to just for a moment before we get there. Well, now we're there.
Is this the worst timeline? Are we living in it presently? I mean, there were pretty bad times. I like having running water and electricity. That's nice. But in terms of modern innovation, And after that, I think we're living in the worst timeline.
Probably.
Sensitivities. Well, you've got young people killing themselves at a higher rate of speed because there's a film of depression wherever it is that these social times put us, where between the reality and lack of reality in what social media is and the weird, we're addicted, we're supposed to be connected. Oh, no, we're all disconnected. This is pretty awful. But we can't, we're lamenting right now the death of comedy because we can't laugh at Bradley Cooper and makeup before we arrive at the controversy and looking it up.
It's exhausting.
It is. Life is exhausting.
It is. I mean, just geez. A lot.
Right.
I watched a Norm Macdonald special. That was great.
Norm Macdonald, Stugatz, if you did not see this, it was kind of moving to watch posthumously. This is Norm Macdonald fearing a little bit his mortality and before going in for a procedure, Stugatz, and Norm Macdonald died pretty suddenly because he kept his life private. But at the end, he just filmed something in front of his computer during a pandemic, a nothing special, where he's just being Norm Macdonald with no audience, and it's really funny. Like, just you're watching him be Norm Macdonald without any interaction with audience, and you're watching a stand-up at his best in one take do just an hour of comedy where you're like, holy shit, what a good act that was. And it was just like stupid shit like flights and taking
right.
land from yes. Native Americans. Does, I mean,
well, that's something.
Yes. He does this riff on cannibalism. And he was up for the challenge. It seems as though, like, I know transphobic jokes have been a hot topic surrounding comedy. It seems as though, like, within the inner circle of stand-up comedians, they're all trying to tackle it, to be the one that makes you laugh while telling one of these jokes. And Norm, in his own kind of Norm way, tackles it, but the joke is really about the danger surrounding telling one of those jokes, to the point that it was one of the only times that I've seen someone actually embrace a challenge and not alienate me while trying to do so.
Well, you and I had a conversation off air. I've not seen Gervais enter these waters. And Stugatz, to me, I know a lot of people get annoyed by how I talk about comedy, but I do really enjoy how brave comedians are to make a living that way. Just it's super hard to get in front of everybody and fail again and again and again and just sculpt a craft and I'm going to get by on my funny. And also the defiance of I'm going to protect my ability to be that funny, whether I'm Chappelle or Gervais. And I will disembowel you if you come for my laughs. I will protect them. Whether Bill Maher now is making an evolution that's just confusing to me because whether you like his style or not, it's always been obnoxious. He is now an old person that does not realize he is shouting at clouds and bothered also by this exhausting time where you can't be center enough. You can't be in the center enough. You're going to get dragged out at a comedian. And Gervais, who pushes the line, Gervais is getting aggregated on because talking about this subject risks phobia no matter what you say. You get hit with phobia no matter what you say, even if you're trying to sliver through the space comedians are always going to try to slither through, which is, oh, you're going to try a degree of difficulty on me? Watch me try to be funny around this when no one can be funny. And as we see comedy getting attacked, where you got Howie Mandel coming out and saying that Chappelle attacked on stage is the beginning and the end of comedy. The beginning of the end of comedy.
Judd, when we had Judd Apatow on the show, I was surprised to hear him double down after he was publicly bullied and ridiculed for his he could have killed
but
him.
But Mike, take. After you see the jailhouse interview of the guy who attacked Chappelle, and he said he was motivated by Chris Rock and the slap of Will Smith. He said that it did make him a little crazy as he runs up there with a gun that's hiding a knife.
I do think comedians have valid concerns about not just where the state of comedy is, where their jokes land today, but also their security, because now we're living in a time where people that are offended are speaking up for themselves in ways that are positioned as brave and empowering. And I don't think that that's all that far off, but it does make for an interesting world in the world of comedy a little bit. I kind of now, like, I love Ricky Gervais. I love Dave Chappelle. And it got to the point where I got word of mouth that Dave Chappelle was still doing the trans jokes, and I just wasn't interested anymore in seeing it. That's my personal choice. I just don't even want to see it. I don't even want to give him the opportunity to try to talk me into him illuminating. I'm just checking out on it. I love Ricky Gervais, and I wanted to see that special. And then I heard that he started dipping his toes in that water. And I'm not even really interested.
Even as Ricky Gervais, right? Doing it as Ricky Gervais and however it is. These guys are going to try and be clever around it. They're going to try to be the ones who can successfully execute the degree of difficulty jokes.
Yeah, I think that there are just some comedians that are reveling in the challenge and want to keep pushing through. Or maybe they're just horrible people that truly believe all these things. But I think it's a couple of different variables. Had I known that Norm was going to dip in his toe into that water the way that he did, I might have avoided it. And I'm kind of glad that I didn't, because I really enjoyed this special. And it was a weird moving wake for Norm MacDonald. And since it's all in one take, there are just these moments that textualize where he was in his life, whether it be a dog barking or a phone ringing. And I think those moments in the special are beautiful, especially for someone like me, who's such a huge fan of Norm MacDonald. But I generally am checking out on the whole transphobic thing, just because no one has been able to change my mind about it. No one's been able to make me really laugh with it. And like I said, I used to love Chappelle. I still do. Hope he gets away from it. I used to love Ricky Gervais, but as I get older, I'm just into different things.
Well, you mentioned Norm MacDonald. There is no winning an argument from the grave, though. In some ways, symbolically, with his last special, he gets the last laugh on this, because what? There's no canceling. He's trying to wade into these waters, and he didn't even get aggregated. Why? Because he's dead. The special's out, and...
And in part of how he skillfully told the joke. The real danger in his joke was that he was telling the joke. The punchline was that he was trying to tell a joke, and the joke was on people's reaction to hearing a joke like that. It wasn't really a direct shot, although it was kind of an indirect shot somewhat. He was tempting something that was very dangerous, and that was the thrill. And I do think that comedians find the thrill in that, too.
So death is a loophole? It's the way out.
Yeah, it's the ultimate cancellation. You can't.
I'm
going to
cancel myself before you can cancel me. I'm not going to have this schedule released until I've died and more people will listen to it. I will have the last laugh from the beyond by attempting this joke the way that they tried. The comedians tried to do it in The Aristocrats. Like, they will look for the challenge in this, whether you like it or not, or whether you can forgive it or not, because you're allowed to find these things less funny. You're allowed to fight for causes and have a zero tolerance policy about, you don't need to be clever comedian guy. But I'm telling you, it's part of what Chappelle is leaning against. Chappelle is leaning against that with the combined defiance of, and no, there will be not another group that goes to the front of the line ahead of black people on equality. Those are the two that he's leaning on as he's the Richard Pryor for our times.
I love stand-up comedy. I watch every stand-up special I can possibly get my hands on ever since I was young. I love the art form. And I used to be an absolutist back when times were different about what can be said on that stage. Basically, outside of what Michael Richards did, have at it. This is an open forum. This is stand-up comedy. But I have been shaped and molded by my peers. And I do feel differently now that I'm 36 and I'm into different things. And ways that I feel about jokes at that community's expense are different today than they were several years ago. And I just liken it to when my Apple Music suggests that I listen to a Ryan Adams song. I was like, well, 3 years ago, I was really into Ryan Adams. Now, the thought of listening to him makes me sick. Stop recommending this to me. I'm not the same person.
I wonder how much of the audience, because Apatow just did George Carlin, Stu Gatz. It's a two-part documentary, and it's exceptional. And you can see how wildly ahead of his time George Carlin was, in a way that's just a bit crazy, that he was doing, he was doing what Bill Maher is doing now 50 years ago. It's hard to imagine how ahead of the curve he was in a time that was less free and comedians were getting arrested.
And stayed relevant with age, was better with age.
It's also hard to envision a time in which Bill Maher is considered a centrist.
Bill Maher has been successfully doing this for 20 years, and while I'm confused by the late evolution, I do get that he's threatened by young people who say, who the hell are you? And his response is, well, I'm Bill Maher. Like, I've done 20 years of making it in this business where these guys compete for who can say the things that are funniest that resonate. And Bill Maher is competing in the comedy world late in life, and every week he goes viral with something, even if it's just young people yelling about who the hell is Bill Maher.
I've never been interested in watching Bill Maher. I guess it's because I was raised Christian conservative that I just thought he was just like this far left wacko. Has he actually become more central? Or is the left just a little bit more
he
left?
He argues that he has not changed, and what it is he shouts at clouds and young people getting to govern the power. Look, man, this is what's happening.
Everyone around him has changed. Not,
it's what's happening with him and Rogan. Like, it's just how a couple of comedians age. They're all aging differently. Look at how Chappelle ages. We've been talking about action heroes over 50. Your favorite comedians are all over 50. Like, just the legends. Like, that doesn't mean the young voices don't have power too, but the legends are the guys who have been doing this over 50 years, standing in front of a microphone, whether it's Eddie Murphy or Jerry Seinfeld or Jay Leno. I enjoyed talking to him on South Beach Sessions this week as one of the guys who made a living doing it that way for 50 years. I've been wanting to talk around here with somebody about what has happened to Bill Maher, because his acidic bitterness, Stugatz, has always been a thing. Even if you sided with him on his screeds on religion, he would do it in such an intensely unlikable way, so obnoxious, over the top, and I'm better than you, that it put people off. But he's been saying things on the edge, the razor's edge of all of this stuff for a long time, and to be able, to me, I don't know whether you want to admire it or not, but I do admire it. I do admire, even if I disagree with you or don't like a million things that you're saying or doing, I admire the craft and the skill of stand-up comedy being a space. Can you navigate it today in 2022 harder than it's ever been? Or should you just sit it out? Should you just sit it out? Because, of course, people
tough
are
to sit
dying,
out if that's the way you make your living.
Well, no, but it's dying hate crimes. You've got hate crimes like any syllable added to the language of laughing or making it a more hostile environment for those who have it harder than you do. I understand the sensitivity of it. Like I also want to just laugh. I want to long for a time where I could just laugh without considering whether or not, we were just talking about the makeup of Bradley Cooper, and we didn't even get six steps into the conversation before it's like, oh yes, that we should have probably been more sensitive there. Yes. But that's like, isn't that what's being navigated right now by everybody? Isn't Joe Rogan counterculture thinker, because he's been the comedian center for, I think a little bit differently, but I'm a stage for these people. I'm the new Tonight Show. I'm the new Johnny Carson.
Did you watch the Bo Burnham outtake, the inside outtake on basically when he's parodying the Joe Rogan podcast? Brilliant stuff. Absolutely nailed the state of, I guess, conservative comedy, or people that today might even deem themselves just mainly centrist. He absolutely nails it in a way to pretty much universal applause. And I even think that Joe Rogan would kind of find it funny.
Bo Burnham did comedy, Stugatz, during the pandemic that was art and showed real range and was a cry for help, was deeply sad, was troubled, and was a unique look at a young comedian doing comedy a little bit differently.
And it also might have been a rib. There's that Andy Kaufman-esque aura around it where, yeah, he's being vulnerable, but is this real vulnerability? Is this amplified?
Is it performance?
Yeah. Is he really alone? And he has kept that air of mystery around the project for a full year, and now he's released, what, about an hour?
But it's not a release. It's the stuff he didn't use. It's, to me, it felt like, without even having seen it, Tiger King tried to hit again. Now, Bo Burnham is an artist. He's great at what he does. His outtakes, my guess, are also exceptional. But I thought he was just releasing stuff because more people wanted anything, any crumbs that he would give them from the art he made over those 90 minutes.
Well, I mean, if you watch Inside, the original Netflix special, you know that this was an arduous filming process. So a lot of things hit the cutting room floor, and there was a lot of demand. I still think he has a number one comedy album for a full year running. It's an all-time great. The songs are legitimately good, too. It pops up on my Apple Music occasionally. I'm like, God, this was a banger. It also makes you laugh. The outtakes are about an hour long. I haven't seen the whole thing. I've been only consuming it in clips.
But what
so
he
far,
did on Rogan was funny.
Everything
I have not
that
seen,
I've
seen it.
Everything that I've seen hit the internet is a solid hit. It made me wonder, why didn't this make the original special? Because the Rogan thing, in the year since he did it, has only become more apropos.
It makes sense, too, Stugatz, in the breadth and the range of the conversation, that a young person, you know, famous, YouTube famous, and really the hard way to do comedy. This is not the way all the old legends have done it, standing in front of clubs with flyers. No, he's like, I'm going to do this my guerrilla way. I've got range as a musician. I'm funny. I'm clever. I'm writing. I'm younger. And he made a work of art during the pandemic that was a different kind of stand-up special. It was not Chris Rock standing on a stage, prowling a stage.
But to be a great comedian, I feel like you have to stand on stage and deliver. No outtakes, no making of a second episode with outtakes that are funnier than what you actually did. You got to stand on a stage like Eddie Murphy, walk back and forth and own that stage. You have to do it live. You do. That's what I'm saying. Otherwise, I don't consider you to be a great comedian. You can be good, but not great. That's all I got for you. He's not one of the all-time greats, Burnham. Yeah, Chris Rock, you got Richard Pryor,
Gallagher.
You got Eddie Murphy, you got Gallagher, you got George Carlin. Those are some of the all-time greats. Why didn't they did it live on a stage, and they own that stage?
Gallagher took it to another level. I mean, he had props, and it wasn't just the mallet. Everybody thinks, oh, he's the guy that has this giant mallet that smashes watermelons. No, I saw specials where he had pools on stage. How he did that, I don't even know. And he'd swing over them with ropes, not to go back to ropes and swings, but he'd go over them with ropes. He had boats. He had beach balls. Everybody in the front row had either the ponchos or they had, like, the garbage bags because they were in the splash zone, which is like, why are you even sitting in there if you want to wear a poncho? You know what
splash.
I mean?
Splash.
What are you talking about?
You don't know Gallagher?
No, what is that?
Ugh, okay. Oh, you don't know Gallagher.
No,
okay.
Yeah.
It's a guy who broke watermelons with a mallet.
He's
on
more
stage.
Than just that. We just
covered
it.
I don't get it.
His brother as well.
Google it right
Gallagher
now.
Too. Google Gallagher. Tony, Billy.
See if he did a show in Hawaii. Maybe it'll connect with you.
Billy, how do you feel about the way that Tony makes you feel old because he doesn't
he
hear
knows who Gallagher
some
is.
Of your dad?
I have no idea who this person is, so I'm trying to.
Oh, you guys.
First Jeremy, thing that comes up is Jeremy. Arthur J. Gallagher and Company.
Jeremy,
you're
how
being
old are
an
you?
Idiot on purpose.
26. Jeremy, you're 26. Have you ever heard of the stand-up comedian Gallagher?
Never.
Go to hell.
Mm. Okay,
I'm with him. I mean, you can't argue.
You heard
that.
Of the
go
rest of the
hell.
Names, though, right? Like Eddie Murphy. You heard of all of them, right?
There are three. There are three prop comics. It is Carrot Top. It is Gallagher, and it is.
Gallagher's brother.
I mean,
Steve Martin.
Jeremy Steve Martin
also.
Was a prop comic.
That's what I'm saying, Dan. You have to come out on stage,
Gallagher's
on the stage with an arrow
Roy,
through your head.
Roy, you just jumped in with
Gallagher
an eagerness
too.
Instead
there was,
of the jump.
Yeah,
I was the first
with
one to mention.
Gallagher's double, brother?
Couple of Gallagher's yeah. cutting it up.
Yeah.
They had a falling out, right?
Yes, they did.
We had Gallagher as a celebrity prognosticator yeah. once. He cursed. Cursed a lot, and he was like offensive.
Yeah, I think there was other stuff.
There was other stuff you cooking other there. Stuff, yeah. We should have gotten Gallagher, too.
Maybe next year.
There was other stuff cooking there.
I was surprised. Was. I was honestly surprised to learn that Gallagher was still with us.
He is.
His guess hit was 75. Was me learning that he's still with us.
But you're also saying that he was probably working blue and working toward cancellation while still with us, while talking about the fact that Norm MacDonald gets the last laugh because he died with his jokes.
Do you think the tribunals that decide whether the liberal tribunals that decide whether or not to cancel somebody? They've had Gallagher's name run across their desk, and they're just like, it's not worth it.
Like the TMZ, TMZ of weaponizing aggregate content. So just like, eh, it's Gallagher. These young people haven't even heard of him. They're going to be like, who's Gallagher? And why is there this offensive content around a guy with a sledgehammer who's just breaking watermelons on stage?
They have interesting decisions to make occasionally.
Dan, like, I got big news. I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, doggy on a Wednesday, Dano, and he is wearing a pink sports coat with a blue tie, a white shirt. He looks fantastic.
It is mauve or it is mango. It is mame. It is a mame.
It is mame.
Mame jacket, and we will go live to First Take next.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.